in and began thawing my clammy fingers. "Here," Tatsumi said quietly, and dropped a single rice ball into my hands. Murmuring my thanks, I watched him walk to the other side of the campfire and sit down to stare into the flames. There was a shimmer in the darkness, and the hairs on the back of my neck rose. Looking up, I saw a tiny, pale green figure, no larger than my thumb, watching me from atop a root a few feet away. It wore a round mushroom cap on its head, and its eyes were like black pits under the brim. Tatsumi saw what I was looking at, and his hand went to his sword. "Tatsumi, no," I warned, holding out a hand. "It's a kodama, a tree kami. It won't hurt us." He relaxed, dropping his hand from the hilt, and I offered the kodama a smile. "Hello," I greeted softly, as the tiny kami tilted its head, watching me. "Please, excuse us. We're just passing through. We're not disturbing your tree, I hope." The kodama didn't blink. It watched me a moment more, then padded forward and hopped onto a stone, staring at me with pupilless black eyes. A faint sound rose into the air, like the rustle of leaves stirred by the wind. I nodded. "I understand. We will stay to the path and we'll be careful not to tread on any new plants or trees. You have my promise."
"You can speak to the kami."
Tatsumi's tone didn't question, though it sounded faintly surprised.
"How?"
"The monks taught me," I replied. Not the whole truth, of course. I'd been able to see the spirit world, kami, yokai, yurei, and the rest of the unnatural, for as long as I could remember. One of the perks, or curses, of being half kitsune. Though the monks did teach me the differences between the myriad spirits in Iwagoto. There were the 9 greater kami, the named deities who were worshipped throughout Iwagoto. Jinkei, god of mercy. Doroshin, god of roads, and so on. The lesser kami were minor gods, spirits of nature and the elements. They existed everywhere, in the earth, the sky, and all places in between. No one knew how many kami existed in the world. When people spoke of them as a whole, it was common to say, "the 8 million gods," and leave it at that. But besides the kami, many other strange, magical creatures roamed the land. Yokai were creatures of the supernatural, sometimes called monsters or bakemono. They could change their forms or had some amount of magic power, tanuki, kamaitachi, and, of course, kitsune being prime examples. Yurei described the many restless ghosts that wandered the mortal realm. Zashiki, warashi, onryo, ubume, and more. There were even some monstrous plants that preyed on humans and a handful of creatures that didn't fit into any category, so the list of gods, ghosts, and monsters was endless. But even though some yokai were dangerous and some yurei had malicious intent, all were residents of Ningenkai, the mortal realm, and were to be respected. Unlike the demons, the amanjaku, and terrible oni like Yaburama, they hailed from Jigoku, the realm of evil and corruption, and did not belong in the mortal world at all. Master Isao and the others revered the kami, I went on. They strove to exist in harmony with all forms of life. The most spiritual among them could see and even speak to the kami on occasion. I sort of had the talent for it, I suppose.
Is that why the kamaitachi listened to you?
Well, not really. I listened to them. The kodama was joined by a friend. Then 3 more appeared between tree roots, and another materialized near the edge of the fire. I looked up to see dozens of the tiny kami perched on rocks and branches, watching us through the rain. A sound rose into the air, like hundreds of dry leaves fluttering at the same time. Tatsumi, observing the growing number of kodama around us, didn't move, but his posture remained tense.
I could sense he was trying very hard not to go for his sword.
"What do they want?"
he asked. I closed my eyes briefly, trying to focus on just one voice. Kodama were difficult to understand at the best of times. "Slow down," I said, holding up a hand. "Please, one at a time. I can't hear if everyone talks all at once. It's like trying to pick a drop out of a waterfall." The sound of whispering branches stopped. The Kodama on the rock stepped forward, chattering in a soft voice that sounded like a leaf skipping around the ground. "They want to know if you are the bearer of Kamigoroshi," I said, "and if you were the one who slew Kibasama today." Tatsumi blinked, then glanced at the now dozens of Kodama watching us from the trees.
"I had no choice."
His voice was calm, neither boastful nor repentant.
"I would have avoided that fight if I could, but Kibasama would have killed us both."
The Kodama broke into chatter again, like thousands of leaves being rustled by the wind, which was strange, as there was no wind. Finally, the noise died down, and a trio of Kodama approached the fire. The kami in the center carried a single leaf like a flag, the stem held upright, the edges bobbing as it walked. Though their faces were tiny and indistinct, I felt this was a very solemn affair. The tree spirits marched up to Tatsumi and bowed, and then the Kodama in the center stepped forward, raising the leaf over its head toward the demon slayer.
"What is this?"
he asked warily. "A gift," I said in amazement, listening as the Kodama chatter went on. "It seems that long ago, Kibasama lost himself to his hunger and greed," I translated, as their voices flowed over me, a faint tickle in my ears. "And it corrupted him until he was no longer a bear, but something unnatural and tainted. Even while he slept, the miasma of dread he produced could be felt by all living things. The birds never sang in Kibasama's wood, the animals were constantly afraid and in hiding, and the humans rarely ventured into the forest. Fear was suffocating the land, but now that you've put him to rest, it can flourish again. That leaf signifies that you are a friend of the forest," I continued, as Tatsumi reached down, carefully took the leaf by the stem, and held it up to his face. It glowed faintly in the darkness, pulsing with a soft green light. "If you are ever in need of the kami's help, whisper your request out loud and release it into the wind. It will carry your message to any nearby Kodama, who will aid you in whatever way they can." His eyes darkened and he shook his head.
"I can't accept this,"
he murmured, lowering his arm. The Kodama voices rustled overhead, echoing my own question. "Why?"
"I kill demons. It's what I do. I didn't slay the bear out of mercy or kindness or anything but survival. If Kibasama hadn't attacked us, I would have been content to leave him there."
"Nonetheless," I said after a moment of listening to the voices of the Kodama, "they want you to have it. You did the forest a service today, and the kami always repay their debts." When he still hesitated, I added, even though the Kodama didn't say it, "You really shouldn't refuse a gift from the kami, Tatsumi-san. They might always repay a debt, but they never forget an insult." He nodded gravely. That, at least, made sense to him.
"Arigato gozaimasu,"
he told the nearest Kodama, lowering his head in a bow.
"I'm not worthy of such a gift, but I will accept it."
The tiny kami returned the bow, straightened, and then floated away, like a leaf picked up and carried by the wind. The rest of the Kodama vanished, fading into trees, until it was just me and Tatsumi once more.
He stared at the glowing leaf, watching it flicker in the darkness before it vanished into the pouch beneath his obi. But his brows were drawn into a slight frown, and I cocked my head at him. Is something wrong, Tatsumi-san? He shook his head.
No, but the leaf should have gone to you, he said, finally meeting my gaze. You were the one who spoke to the Kamaitachi. You figured out how to free them so they would turn on the witch. If you hadn't done that, we would have both died.
The reward wasn't for slaying the witch, I returned gently. It was for putting Kiba-sama out of his misery and returning the forest to its natural state. The Kodama don't care about individual human lives as much as they want the forest to be healthy. You were the one who killed the demon, thus their favor goes to you. Tatsumi frowned.
I've killed dozens of demons and yokai, he murmured. Perhaps a few kami as well. Until today, I didn't know that yokai could be talked to or reasoned with.
Not all yokai are evil, I said quietly, surprised to feel a tiny flicker of hurt. They're part of the natural order, just like the kami. Sometimes you don't know what they want until you talk to them. He didn't say anything to that for several heartbeats, staring into the fire as if lost in thought. I tossed a few twigs into the flames and watched the fire consume them, and wondered what would have happened had the Wind Witch exposed me. Would Tatsumi be sitting here with me now? Would the fact that I'd saved his life have any impact on the revelation that I was Kitsune? Or would he take his terrible glowing sword and try to cut off my head? I've killed dozens of demons and yokai, he'd just told me. Did that mean he had killed Kitsune too? According to the monks, my full-blooded kin were tricksters and opportunists, but there were a few cases in which they were truly dangerous. Had Tatsumi's clan ever sent him to kill a fox? And if they had, did he think all Kitsune were wild, treacherous creatures that should be put down?
There is something you should know about me, Tatsumi said, startling me from my thoughts.
I looked up to find him still brooding into the flames, his expression thoughtful.
Something that you should decide for yourself, before we go any farther.
I straightened, surprised that he was volunteering information. In all our travels, Tatsumi had shied away from any questions about himself, his family, or his clan. After his tortured confession earlier today, I'd promised myself I wouldn't press him further, that his secrets were his own. After all, I had my fair share of secrets too. You can tell me, I said. It won't scare me off, I promise. Well, unless you're really a yurei who's been masquerading as a human all this time. Oh, but if that were the case, you wouldn't know you were a ghost, would you? He continued to watch the fire. I sensed he was still struggling with himself, debating whether or not to say anything, before he bowed his head with a sigh.
There is a rather large price on my head, Tatsumi admitted at last. Not from the magistrates or clans or any human organizations. From the demons and yokai. From the spirit world. They want me dead. Or, technically, they want the bearer of Kamigoroshi dead.
Why?
Because Kamigoroshi was created to kill demons, Tatsumi answered. That's the entire purpose of its existence. And not just demons, it also works on yokai, spirits, even kami. Creatures that can't be slain with a normal blade.
Oh, I said. I'd known Kamigoroshi wasn't a normal sword, but I hadn't known the entire demon and spirit world was aware of it and its bearer. So you're saying that if a ghost came right through the wall and tried to grab you, you could kill it?
Yes.
What about fireball yokai? They have no bodies. Can Kamigoroshi kill them too?
I've killed several.
Oni?
Yes, Yumeko.
Tatsumi nodded.
Even an Oni, if it doesn't kill me first,
But that's not the point I wanted to make. Within the blade is the trapped spirit of a demon. Its name is Hakaimono, and it is old, powerful, and very angry. Whoever wields Kamigoroshi is constantly in danger of having their soul possessed. I drew in a slow breath, trying to process what he'd told me. He carried a demon in his blade. That was why just looking at the sword could make my skin crawl. "What happens if your soul is possessed?" I asked in a small voice. Tatsumi gave me a cold stare.
"What do you think?"
Now it was I who gazed into the fire, watching it snap and curl. For a moment, I found it sadly ironic. This was the most I'd ever heard him talk, and it was about something I could really do without hearing. "Why are you telling me this now?"
"You saved my life," Tatsumi said. "I want you to understand what staying with me really means."
He held the sheathed blade up to the light.
"Kamigoroshi is a cursed sword, Yumeko. Its bearer is also cursed. Demons and yokai will constantly seek me out to destroy me, which means they'll try to kill you too. And I am not someone you should ever trust. In fact, it would be better if I'd never made that promise."
I looked up quickly. "What are you trying to say, Tatsumi?" He paused. My heart thumped in my chest and my stomach knotted as I watched him. The firelight danced in his eyes and flickered over his face, and his expression looked strangely torn.
"Being around me will always be dangerous," he finally said. "I will do my best to protect you as I promised, but enemies of all sorts will come after us. Some might be very powerful. All will try to kill me. And there is the constant danger of Hakaimono. I want you to be fully prepared for what that means."
"Tatsumi-san," I hesitated, knowing I had to choose my words carefully, to not give him any indication that I had the dragon's prayer, the thing the demons, witches, and yokai were really after. "I have to find Master Jiro," I told him. "I must reach the Steel Feather Temple to let them know what happened to Master Isao and the others. I have a duty of my own, but more than that, it was Master Isao's last request. I promised him I would find the temple and warn them all. I just hope the demons don't find the Steel Feather Temple before me." His shoulders slumped. The concept of duty was all too familiar for a warrior. And Tatsumi, as cold and hardened and dangerous as he was, didn't seem the type to abandon a vow. "I made a promise too," I said. "I'm going to the temple, Tatsumi-san, with or without you. You're welcome to follow along. I would welcome the company, and I'm not afraid. But you don't have to be so gloomy about it." He blinked and looked up at me.
"Gloomy?"
Apparently, no one had accused him of being gloomy before, either. "I don't think I've ever seen you smile," I told him. "Master Isao would say you look like a monkey who accidentally dropped its last persimmon into a pond." That statement brought out a bemused frown, and I smiled. "I trust you, Tatsumi. I think you're too strong to let a demon possess you. And if you're worried about monsters or yokai coming after us, don't be. I'm not completely helpless. I certainly surprised the Wind Witch today."
"You did."
The ghost of a smile crossed his face.
"Did your master Isao often compare people to monkeys?"
"Not usually. Mostly it was just me." He actually chuckled, and it sent a flutter through my insides. Though he sobered almost immediately.
"All right," he said. "Then we continue together. For as long as I can protect you. Until I've paid my debt."
The Kodama watched over us all night.
14. Beware of stray dogs. Tatsumi, listen, Yumiko said the next morning. You can hear the birds again. I glanced at her. She was walking beside me down the trail with her head tilted upward, gazing into the branches. Overhead, the sun slanted through the leaves, mottling the forest floor, and several small, feathered creatures flitted back and forth above us, chirping. I hadn't noticed until she pointed it out, but the woods did seem a little brighter today, less oppressive. I guess my slaying Kiba-sama had helped the forest, just as the Kodama had said. My gaze lingered on Yumeko. A smile graced her lips as she followed the movements of the birds, the sun gleaming off her black hair and sliding over her skin. This morning she had left a small portion of rice at the base of one of the oak trees, a gift for the Kodama. Though in the bright sunlight, it was hard to imagine that the night before it had been filled with kami. I shook myself. Last night had been surreal in many ways. I still couldn't believe I'd revealed so much, both about myself and the sword. The Kage would not be pleased that I'd told her of Hakaimono, but if we were to travel together, at least now she was forewarned. She had certainly surprised me yesterday, both in saving my life and speaking to the kami on my behalf. I'd never thought I'd be indebted to a peasant girl with no warrior training, but there was certainly more to her than I'd first thought. I was somewhat relieved that the truth about Kamigoroshi hadn't frightened her away. Deep inside, I could feel Hakaimono's cold amusement.
Yes, it seemed to whisper. Keep her around. Tell her there is nothing to fear, that you will be able to protect her. It will make the moment you strike her down all the sweeter.
Chilled, I severed the connection and felt the demon fade away, though the echo of its laughter rippled through me, accenting my mistake. I'd spoken of demons and yokai and the things that wanted me dead, but in truth, the greatest danger to Yumeko was standing right beside her. After a few hours, we left the forest and followed the river once more as it wound lazily through a valley, heading north toward the capital. By my estimations, we were perhaps a day or two from the border, which was going to be a problem. I'd lost my travel papers when my horse had fled the Amanjaku, and there was no way to acquire more, legally or not. No one cared about the peasant class, so Yumiko would be fine, but an unauthorized samurai wandering through another clan's territory was cause for alarm. Without proper documents, if we went through the checkpoint between territories, I would likely be detained for an indefinite amount of time while they decided what to do with me. Since that option was out of the question, I was going to have to find a way around, as sneaking through the checkpoint with Yumiko would be too risky. A flutter of blue caught my eye, coming from a way station standing alone at the edge of the trail. The small wooden establishments were fairly common on the roads between towns, places where travelers could stop and purchase a hot meal or even a bed before continuing to their destination. Blue curtains were draped across the entrance and a miniature tanuki statue holding a sake jug perched in the window, welcoming customers. Yumiko stopped in the middle of the road, inhaling deeply.
What is this place? She wondered. It smells wonderful.
Just a rest stop, I told her. You can buy a meal here if you have the coin. We're probably a few miles from a town. I trailed off as she gave me a wide-eyed, hopeful look and sighed. I take it you're hungry again?
I gave my rice to the Kodama this morning, she replied, looking plaintive. All I've had to eat today is a plum.
Digging into my money pouch, I silently handed her a few copper kairu, and she smiled at me before hurrying to the rest stop window. She returned with two bowls of steaming soba noodles, and we took our food around the side of the building to eat. Low wooden benches lined the wall, spaced a few feet apart, but not all of them were empty. A lone traveler slouched on a bench a few seats down, a sake bottle on the wooden surface and a cup in his hand.
He was perhaps a few years older than me, wearing a tattered vest and trousers, and his dark, reddish-brown hair was tied back while still managing to look unkempt. A single short blade was shoved through his obi, and a large onyx wood bow lay on the bench beside him. He caught my gaze and smirked, lifting the sake cup in a mocking salute before tipping the contents into his mouth. I ignored him, having seen his kind many times before. A ronin, one of the masterless samurai that, through shame, dishonor, or the death of their lord, had been stripped of all wealth and titles and wandered the country in disgrace. A few found new lords to serve under, but many took whatever jobs they could, offering themselves as bodyguards or hired muscle, while others turned to banditry and murder. They were considered uncouth and uncivilized, having abandoned the code of Bushido and everything they once stood for, and the samurai despised them, because they were a constant reminder of what could happen to any of them at any time. I perched on the edge of the seat as Yumiko sat down beside me, already engrossed in her food. I deliberately did not look in the ronin's direction, though I could feel his gaze on us as he took another swig of sake, drinking straight from the bottle this time. In my travels, I had encountered two main types of troublemakers: the type who took offense to being noticed, and the type who took offense to being ignored. Of course, there were also the ones who were just looking for trouble, and they were impossible to avoid. I hoped this ronin wasn't that type.
"Oi!"
came a mocking voice from the other end of the benches, dashing my hopes. The ronin was watching Yumiko, a wide smirk on his face.
"I saw that look. Don't you know it's rude to stare, little lady?"
Yumiko blinked and looked up from her bowl, a mouthful of soba dangling from her lips. She swallowed quickly.
"I'm sorry, I wasn't staring at you," she said. "Unless you're talking about the noodles, and I'm pretty certain the noodles don't care."
"Ignore him," I told her quietly, concentrating on my own food. "He's trying to bait you into conversation."
"I heard that,"
the ronin stated, sitting upright on the bench.
"And that was very rude. If I were still a samurai, I might have to demand satisfaction from your quiet friend there."
He rose, and I wished I still had the kunai throwing knives hidden in my bracers. Still, if he made any threatening moves, he would be dead before he knew what was happening. Hakaimono stirred, sensing trouble, and I shoved the demon's presence down. Slinging the bow over his shoulders, the ronin sauntered forward, that defiant smirk still creasing his face.
"Luckily for you," he went on, "I'm a filthy ronin dog with no honor left to his name. Don't want to risk soiling your own by having a civil conversation with me, right?"
Yumiko cocked her head, puzzled and unafraid.
"What's a ronin?"
The other's brows rose. Clearly, that was not what he'd expected.
You really don't know what a ronin is?"
Yumiko shook her head.
"I lived in a temple all my life," she explained. "I don't know much about the outside world, but I'm sorry if I offended you. If you would, please tell me what a ronin is so that I won't insult anyone else in the future."
For a moment, the ronin just stared at her. Finally, he chuckled and shook his head.
"Apologies, my lady," he stated,
and gave an over-exaggerated mocking bow.
"As I said before, I'm a ronin. We're dirty, uncouth barbarians who have forgotten our manners along with our honor, so you'll have to forgive me if I'm a bit rusty on the social graces."
He seemed proud of that fact as he straightened again, smiling.
"Let's see if I can remember how to be polite. My name is Hino Okame, and whom do I have the honor of conversing with this fine afternoon?"
"Yumeko," the girl replied, "and I'm no lady. Just a peasant from the mountains. So, I'm a bit rusty on social graces, too."
"Oh?"
Without pretense, the ronin sat beside her, making me drop my hand to my sword hilt. Neither the ronin nor Yumiko seemed to notice.
"So, you're from the mountains, eh? What are you doing out here?
Traveling. Tatsumi and I are on our way to the capital.
Ever been to the city before?
No. Yumiko shook her head. Never. The outside world so far is strange, but exciting.
She smiled and looked down the road, where it stretched away toward the distant mountains.
I'm learning so much. I can't wait to see what's around the next bend.
Huh,
the ronin snorted.
Well, I'm afraid you'll be disappointed in time, Yumiko-san. The world is full of bandits, murderers, liars, and thieves. You can't trust anyone, especially ronin. Ever seen wild dogs before?
His grin crept back, defiant.
If they think you have food, they'll follow you for a while, but try to pet them, and they'll go right for your throat.
I wasn't certain that Yumiko, with her sheltered upbringing, would get what the ronin was implying, but she lowered her bowl and looked the stranger in the eye.
And yet, she said, I've heard stories of wild dogs who would defend a stranger on the road to their last breath, simply because that person threw a crumb instead of a rock.
The ronin smirked.
You have a strange way of thinking, Yumiko-san,
he said, shaking his head.
I bet your brooding friend there doesn't think the same.
His gaze slid over to me, narrowing. I saw him take in my clothes and my sword, and a gleam of recognition ran through his eyes.
You're a bit far from home, aren't you, Kage?
He asked, his voice suspicious.
What are you doing way out here in Earth Clan territory?
Minding my own affairs.
Oh, mysterious.
The ronin snickered and turned back to Yumiko.
You'll want to be careful around any members of the Shadow Clan, Lady Yumiko. It's said that a kage never lies, but they never tell you the whole truth either.
That sounds very difficult, Okame-san. How can you lie and tell the truth at the same time?
Trust me, they manage it.
I put down my bowl and stood, facing the ronin, who watched warily from the other side of the girl. I think it's time for you to leave, I said quietly.
Yep, looks like I've overstayed my welcome.
The ronin chuckled and rose from the bench.
Took longer than I thought it would, though.
He swung his bow to his shoulder and raised a hand to the girl.
Sayonara, Yumiko-san. Maybe I'll see you on the road sometime.
Okame-san?
Yumiko said, and held up her hand, where something glittered between her fingers.
Here.
Puzzled, the ronin held out his hand, and she dropped a single copper kairu into his palm. Frowning, the ronin glanced from the coin in his hand to the girl.
What's this?
He asked. Yumiko smiled and picked up her bowl.
A crumb.
The ronin shook his head.
You're a strange girl,
he muttered. Though the coin vanished almost before he'd finished the sentence.
But hell, I won't argue with free coin. Good luck on your travels, wherever you're headed. You're going to need it.
With one last smirk at me, he turned and sauntered off. I watched until the solitary figure had vanished around a bend in the road before I sat down again. That was my money you just gave away so freely. She offered an apologetic grimace.
Gomen, Tatsumi. I'll pay you back as soon as I can. I promise.
That seemed unlikely, so I shrugged, resigned to never seeing the kairu again.
It's fine,
I said, retrieving my bowl. I just hope you're not planning free handouts to every ronin we meet from here to the Steel Feather Temple.
No,
she shook her head.
I didn't even think about it. It just seemed like the right thing to do.
She pushed back her hair, looking thoughtful.
Master Isao had a saying. He told me that the tiniest pebble, when dropped into a pond, will leave ripples that will grow and spread in ways we cannot comprehend.
She paused, then smiled to herself, shaking her head.
Of course, sometimes that worked against me whenever I played a very small prank on Denga or Nitoru. The consequences would get bigger and bigger. Things would spiral out of control. A troop of monkeys would end up in the prayer hall, and then I'd be polishing the veranda for the next month.
Her face crinkled in a half-grin, half-grimace, before she sobered again.
Now that he's gone, she murmured,
I want to remember everything he taught me. Out here, I feel like I can easily lose sight of what's important. I don't want to forget the things that will keep me grounded. It sounded as if she was about to say something else, but I didn't press it. We finished our bowls in silence, then headed back to the road. As we began walking again, I noticed the crow perched on the roof of the rest stop, watching us as we left.
Why don't you like Ronin, Tatsumi?
I gave Yumeko a puzzled look. Past the way station, the land had opened up into rolling hills with scattered farms and thatched houses between them. Rice terraces set into hillsides dotted the landscape, and specks of people milled between them, working the fields that were the backbone of the whole country. It was very quiet on the road Yumeko and I walked, until the unexpected question came out of nowhere. She cocked her head at me.
"The Ronin, Okame-san," she clarified.
"He didn't seem so bad. No different than anyone else, except he kept calling himself a dog. Why would he do that? Is it because he chases rabbits? Or has fleas?"
"Ronin have no masters," I told her, "and no honor. They're disgraced, so they wander the land doing whatever they can to survive."
"I have no master," Yumeko said. "Not anymore.
Does that mean I'm disgraced too?" "No, you're a peasant."
"Peasants are different than Ronin?"
"Peasants have no honor to begin with," I said. "No one expects them to behave above their station. Ronin were once samurai and lost their status."
"But they're still the same, aren't they?"
Yumeko's voice was confused.
"They just lost their master and their title. That shouldn't change who they are inside."
"Sometimes it does."
"How?"
"The code is a samurai's whole life," I replied. "Honor defines them. Duty to their master, their family, and their clan is everything. Once they lose that, they are nothing, worthless, and everyone sees them as such."
"Do you keep saying them?" Yumeko pointed out. "But you're samurai too, aren't you, Tatsumi?"
I didn't say anything to that, and thankfully she didn't press the question. As the sun was beginning to set, we left a valley and entered another forest, which grew thicker as we continued. Bushes, logs, and gnarled roots spilled onto the narrow road, forcing us to step over or around them. Cedar, pine, and camphor loomed overhead, crowding out the sky, and the air was heavy and quiet. As we climbed a flight of mossy stone steps, flanked on both sides by huge, shaggy trunks, Yumeko paused.
"Something is wrong,"
she muttered, gazing wearily into the trees.
"It's too still. The birds have all stopped."
I jerked back as an arrow streaked from the trees and struck the trunk behind me. Raucous laughter echoed around us. Figures emerged from between the trunks, moving to block the steps from above and below. A half dozen rough-looking men with bows and wide, eager smiles. A large man with a bald head and a nose like a spoiled fig appeared at the top of the steps. He carried a large wooden club over one meaty shoulder and grinned down at us with yellow, uneven teeth.
"Kage-san,"
he greeted as two smaller men came to flank him, pointing arrows in our direction. His voice was slow and gravelly.
"How good of you to finally arrive."
Bloodlust surged through me, Hakaimono waking to eager life, surrounded by so many enemies. The urge to draw the sword was nearly overwhelming. I forced my hand away from the blade and stared at the bandit leader, forcing myself to speak calmly.
"Do I know you?"
"Nah."
The big man stumbled a bit, as if drunk, and gestured to someone behind us.
"But Okame told us all about you, friend. I feel like we're practically family."
"Okame?"
Yumeko sounded stunned as she glanced over her shoulder and saw the Ronin we'd encountered earlier standing at the bottom of the steps, an arrow knocked to his bow.
His face was dark, and he didn't meet her gaze. "What are you doing?"
"He was scouting the road for targets," I told Yumiko, observing our situation. Two archers at the top of the steps, and three men behind us, including the traitorous Ronin. As soon as he left us, he went back to tell his friends we were coming. Yumiko continued to stare at the Ronin, her voice soft.
"Is that true, Okame-san?"
A heartbeat of silence, then the Ronin raised his head with a defiant smirk.
"Never trust filthy Ronin dogs, Yumiko-chan," he grinned, and the men around him snickered. "They have no honor left to their name. Next time, better to let the impatient samurai cut off my head and leave it in the sun to rot."
The big man chortled.
"Well said, dog. And we all know what happens next."
He swung his club into his palm with a meaty thwop and grinned at me.
"Samurai, give us everything you have and we'll let you live. If not, we'll kill you and take it anyway. Oh, and leave the woman. She can keep me company tonight."
"What?"
Behind us, the Ronin took a step forward, scowling up at his leader.
"That wasn't the plan, Noboru," he called up the steps. "You told me we were going to take the money and let them go."
"Changed my mind."
The big man ran a fat tongue along his teeth.
"That was before I saw what a pretty little servant was with him. I haven't had a woman in a long time."
"That's because they can smell you coming a mile away."
The other Ronin's voice was disgusted now.
"I didn't sign up for this. I might be a filthy Ronin dog, but I'm not a running pig."
The bandit leader scowled.
"Last I checked," he drawled, "I was the leader of this operation, and you were the mangy nobody we let join out of pity. You don't like how we do things, Okame? You can leave. But the woman stays. Boys?"
He glanced around at his men, then pointed at me.
"Kill the samurai. Bring me the girl."
15. The Consequences of Crumbs. My stomach dropped as several bows were aimed at Tatsumi. The warrior crouched, hand hovering over his sword hilt, waiting for them. My heart raced and I felt the surge of fox magic spread to my fingers, making me clench my fists. For a split second, everything held its breath, and the silence drew out like a taut bowstring.
"Ah, the hell with this!"
Abruptly, Okame spun, plunged an arrow into the throat of the bandit beside him, jerked it out, then strung it to his bow as the man dropped with a startled gurgle. Raising the weapon, he loosed the string, and one archer at the top of the steps who had been taking aim at Tatsumi toppled backward, an arrow jutting from his middle.
"Okame!" bellowed the bandit leader. "You filthy traitor! How dare you turn on us?"
"Hey, I'm an honorless Ronin dog, remember?"
Okame called back, grinning savagely as he sent an arrow toward his former leader. Noboru swiftly raised his club, and the dart struck the wooden head.
"That's what we do."
"Kill him!"
Noboru roared at the remaining archer and started down the steps.
"Both of them!"
Tatsumi's sword hissed free as the warrior leaped up the steps to confront the huge bandit striding toward us. Fear shot through me as Noboru swung his club in two hands, sweeping it through the air at Tatsumi's head. The warrior ducked, and the bandit struck the trunk of a tree with a loud crack, leaving a massive dent in the wood. Kamigoroshi flashed, cutting across Noboru's bulging stomach, and the bandit howled in pain and rage. A curse behind me caught my attention. Near the bottom of the steps, Okame was on his back, bow raised and desperately blocking the other bandit's sword as it hacked and stabbed at him. Tatsumi was busy with the bandit leader, and there was no one else around who could help. If I didn't aid the Ronin, he could die.
I drew my tanto and stared at the knife for a moment, hands shaking. I had never used it against a person, but I couldn't employ fox magic or kitsune bee now. Striding down the steps, I raised the knife and slashed at the bandit attacking Okame, cutting his arm. He jerked back with a yelp, glaring at me, giving Okame enough time to sit up, draw the sword at his belt, and stab him through the chest.
Arigato, Yumeko-san,
Okame gasped, scrambling upright. There was a gash across his cheek and a puncture wound seeping blood over his vest, but he was still grinning as he shook his head at me.
That was one hell of a crump. Ah!
He jerked upright, grimacing, as an arrow streaked from the top of the steps and hit him in the back. I caught him as he fell forward and staggered under his weight. He clutched at my robes, loosening the furoshiki, and something dropped from the wrapping cloth. The shiny lacquered scroll case hit the top of the steps with a faint clink, then rolled steadily toward the edge of the staircase. My heart turned to ice. Swiftly, I stepped on the case, halting it before it could drop off the edge. In my arms, the ronin was a heavy, gasping weight as we both teetered on the edge of the stairs.
Okame-san!
I gritted out, gazing desperately at the ronin while trying to keep us both upright and the scroll from rolling down the steps.
Are you all right? Can you stand?
He raised his head with a shudder.
Kuso!
He swore, staggering back a pace.
Damn it, I guess I should have known better than to turn my back.
Whirling, he raised his bow and fired at the top of the steps. The last archer, who had been taking aim at Tatsumi, jerked as an arrow hit him in the throat and toppled backward into the brush. At the same time, I bent and grabbed the scroll from the edge of the staircase, then stuffed it in my robes as I bounced back up.
Safe, I think. Let's hope Tatsumi was too busy to see that.
A thunderous crash came from the center of the stairs as Noboru pitched forward, hit the ground, and rolled the rest of the way to the bottom. His blank, beady eyes peered up at us as his head flopped to the side, a line of crimson splitting his face nearly in two. I shivered and looked away as Okame let out a soft curse.
Yep.
He sighed, staggering back a pace.
That was incredibly stupid, Okame.
He collapsed to the stones. I looked around for Tatsumi. Near the top of the steps, the demon slayer calmly flicked blood from his sword and turned to me, crimson streaked across his face and forearms. His eyes glowed purple in the fading light. I tensed, wondering if he would say anything about the scroll or what had happened with the ronin, but he only sheathed his weapon and turned away.
We're done here,
he said quietly.
Let's go, before it gets too dark.
I turned back toward Okame, crumpled at the bottom of the stairs, and my stomach twisted.
Tatsumi, wait!
I called. He paused, and I nodded at the ronin's still, bloody form.
What about Okame?
He blinked and tilted his head.
What about him?
We can't leave him here. He's injured.
He tried to kill us,
Tatsumi said, his voice flat.
He led us into an ambush. Those bandits would have shown us no mercy.
He helped us in the end, I argued. He's not like the others. I don't think we should leave him here to die. Tatsumi didn't move, and I frowned at him.
Fine, you go on ahead. I'll catch up when I can.
I walked back to the fallen ronin, then knelt at his side to examine the arrow. It jutted out below his left shoulder blade, the shaft sitting in the center of a dark circle of blood, spreading slowly across his vest.
If you're going to yank that out, just do it quick,
came a tight voice. I blinked and looked down to see that the ronin's eyes were open, gazing back at me.
Grab it as close to the head as you can, and give it a good hard tug.
Won't it hurt?
Nah, I get shot like this all the time. Sometimes I shoot myself with arrows, just so I can rip them out again.
Really? I gaped at him. How is that even possible? Is it some sort of exercise? Do you also try to dodge the arrows or catch them as they come in?
I'm being sarcastic, Yumeko-san.
Okame gave a pained smile.
Of course it's going to hurt, but it's gotta come out sometime. I can't walk to town with an arrow sticking out of me. Just yank it out and leave me here. I'll be fine.
Gazing at the length of wood jutting from the Ronin's back, I hesitated, gathering my courage for the deed. Taking a deep breath, I started to reach for the shaft when a shadow fell over us. I glanced up just in time to see Tatsumi reach down, grab the arrow, and yank it out in one swift motion.
Ah!
Yelped the Ronin, jerking against the stones.
Kuzo! Ow!
Panting, he glared back at us.
Damn it, Kage! If you're going to kill me, just cut off my head and be done with it. You don't have to torture me with false hope.
Tatsumi tossed the bloody arrow to the ground.
If I was going to kill you, you'd already be dead, he stated flatly. Where's your hideout?
Our hideout? Why?
Okame struggled painfully to a sitting position, clenching his jaw.
This is all of the gang. There's no one left for you to slaughter.
Because I don't want to carry your bleeding carcass to town once you collapse from blood loss.
Tatsumi crossed his arms, gazing up the steps.
Because Yumeko refuses to leave you in the road to die. If your hideout is close, better to go there. I assume you have basic necessities like water and bandages.
Water, yes. Bandages, I'm sure I can find something.
I blinked up at the warrior, surprised. You're staying? Cold violet eyes regarded me without expression.
I promised I would, didn't I? I said I would escort you to the capital, and I have yet to repay my debt. So?
He reached down and, in one smooth motion, grabbed the Ronin, hauled him to his feet, and slung his arm around his shoulders. The Ronin yelped and swore, then made a comment about being better off dead. Tatsumi ignored him.
Come on, let's get this over with.
16. Yokai in the Moonlight. Master Ichiro would beat you senseless if he saw you now. I ignored the thought, concentrating on keeping myself and the bleeding Ronin upright as we walked through the forest, eventually coming upon the hideout in a stand of trees. The bandits had taken shelter in an abandoned woodsman's cottage, not far from where they'd staged their ambush. The cottage itself was ancient and run down. The veranda was sagging, the railings rotted away, and the thatch roof was full of holes. Inside it was even worse, the floor covered with thin mattresses and strewn with dirty bowls, loose chopsticks, dice, blankets, and empty sake bottles. It smelled of sweat, urine, and too many unwashed humans in the same room at once. I dropped the Ronin on one of the dirty mattresses, then retreated outside to the veranda, leaving Yumeko to bind his wounds. Leaning against a rotten post, I gazed up at the sky, watching the sunset behind the trees as grim thoughts swirled around my head.
What are you doing, Tatsumi? You should have killed him. Now another has become involved, and if the clan finds out, they might order you to kill him anyway.
Which, under normal circumstances, wouldn't bother me. The death of a single Ronin, disgraced and alone, meant nothing to anyone. Except, perhaps, Yumeko. For reasons I couldn't comprehend, she had taken a liking to the dishonored bandit. That, or she was incapable of minding her own affairs. If the clan ordered me to kill him, I would obey, as I had always done. But it might frighten or enrage the girl into leaving, and I couldn't afford that either. I sighed. Everything was getting complicated. First Yumeko, now this Ronin.
This is why the clan warned you about attachments. You are a weapon. Attachments will only slow you down and make you question your objective. Remember, your loyalty is to the Kage. Nothing else.
A yelp came from inside the cottage, followed by Yumiko's hasty apology. I shook my head. It didn't matter.
The Ronin was a momentary distraction. Once we were done here, we could get back on the road to the capital and then the Steel Feather Temple. I just had to endure until then. There was a flutter of wings, and a large black crow alighted on the railing a few yards away. Lowering its head, it pecked curiously at the rotting wood, then regarded me with dark, beady eyes. We stared at each other, unmoving in the evening shadows. I thought I could sense a presence behind the crow's unblinking stare, another pair of eyes watching me from the unknown. Palming my single kunai, I hurled it at the railing. It struck the wood beneath the crow with a thunk, and the bird took to the air with a startled, indignant caw. I watched it flap away over the rooftop, then I rose and walked to the railing to pull the knife from the wood.
Tatsumi!
Yumiko came onto the veranda, the weathered boards creaking softly under her weight, and I slipped the kunai back into my sleeve.
The wound has been cleaned and taken care of, she told me. We can go, but Okame says the nearest town is a half-day's walk from here. We might as well spend the night and leave tomorrow morning.
I stifled another sigh, seeing the pale outline of the moon through the branches of a tree. If that's what you want... She cocked her head, as if she had been expecting me to argue.
And you won't try to kill Okame-san?
She asked. No.
Or leave in the middle of the night?
No.
Or tie him to a tree and hang sweet potatoes from his ears until the squirrels crawl all over him?
No.
Oh, that's a relief, though the last one would have been slightly amusing. Denga threatened me with that once. I didn't think he was serious, but I could never be sure with Denga-san.
Oi, Kage!
The ronin poked his head through the doorframe, smirking at me, and held up a small white bottle.
Care for a drink?
He asked, not seeming hindered by his wounds at all.
We lifted a couple barrels from a cart a few days ago, and I hate to let good sake go to waste. Come on, I'll pour for you.
He grinned in a rather wolfish fashion, slightly pointed canines glinting in the darkness.
To show my appreciation that you didn't cut off my head and leave it in the sun to rot.
I looked away.
I'll pass.
Drinking sake, shochu, and other alcoholic beverages was generally frowned upon by my instructors. My senses had to remain sharp and ready, not dulled by drunkenness.
All right, the ronin shrugged. Your loss... But it's unlucky to drink sake alone. Come on then, Yumeko-chan. Guess we'll have to drink the rest of it ourselves.
I've never had sake before,
Yumeko said, sounding eager as their footsteps retreated into the hut.
The monks used to serve it for special occasions, but they always kept it away from me.
Denga said that he'd sooner set his room on fire himself than let me get a taste for it.
Oh-ho! A sake virgin!
The ronin's voice was gleeful.
Well, you don't know what you've been missing, Yumeko-chan. And those monks of yours sound terribly dull. Never let you have sake. What a crime. We'll have to remedy that right away.
I put a hand over my eyes, suddenly regretting that I'd promised not to kill the ronin. Protecting the girl was becoming more and more difficult. Not that I cared what she did, but she was beautiful and naive, and, by his own admission, the ronin had no honor left to his name. A vision abruptly came to mind, the two of them together, alone and drunk on sake. Setting my jaw, I pushed myself off the railing to walk back into the hut. There was a shimmer in the corner of my eye, and a small white ball rolled toward me down the veranda. I didn't step back, though my hand dropped to the hilt of my sword. We weren't alone. Perhaps the hut was home to a yure or other restless ghost, though how the bandits had stayed here for so long without encountering the spirit, I wasn't sure. The ball rolled silently across the wooden boards until it veered away and dropped off the edge. Bouncing once, it continued to glide across the yard until it hit the edge of the woodpile. A child stepped from behind the logs, picked up the ball, and smiled at me. A boy of 5 or 6, wearing a black robe with sleeves that were too big, wooden geta clogs, and a tattered straw hat. His head was shaved, only a tuft of dark hair clinging to his forehead, and beneath that, a single